Good evening, everyone. It's 6 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, January 18th, 2024. I would like to call the Ponsonlet Town Council to order. I would ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that all council members are present and in council chambers. To begin, I need to share some very sad news, and most of you are aware. We lost our longtime employee, a member of our Ponsonlet family, Jeff Miller. We had the privilege of his presence in this town since 1992. We experienced his professionalism, his dedication, his kindness, his sense of humor, and his passing will leave a hole in the heart of Ponsonlet. I am sure that I'm not alone in hearing from our residents about their sorrow, along with ideas to properly honor Jeff. Our council members will most likely have suggestions as well. And I would like us to discuss those ideas when we begin our comments at the end of this agenda and before we share our own end-of-night comments, so that we can appropriately focus on Jeff and what it is we would like to do to honor him. For now, for our town's business, we need to move to the meeting, and I know it is difficult, but let us all do our best. Now, first, I do want to remind everybody that if you wish to speak during citizen participation, we have these pink forms, and if you wish to speak, please provide it to our town clerk. Item number 4 of the agenda, additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda. Are there any? Mike?
None from staff.
Does anyone have any? No? Okay, seeing none, I move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted as presented. Item 5, proclamations, presentations. A, the proclamation report. Tomorrow, I have the honor of presenting to one of our residents, Brittany Schoen, a proclamation recognizing her achievements and her accomplishments as R.J. Longstreet Elementary School's Teacher of the Year. There is a celebration at the school, and I have been asked to participate with this proclamation. Additionally, in recognition of Black History Month, a proclamation has been signed declaring the month of February 2024 as Black History Month. We will have a presentation of World Encephalitis Day by Kat Atwood. Now, I want to say Kat Atwood is a dear friend of mine, and many of us know her as a former Port Orange councilwoman. She ran for the council seat that had been vacated by Representative Chase Tremont in November of 2022. And Kat has always worked for the community, but no sooner had she been sworn into office, prepared to address the many, many issues of her residents, Kat had a seizure, and her memory was affected to the point where her only choice was to step down last January as a Port Orange councilwoman. Kat is here to tell us of her journey. She will share with us information about this particular disease, this illness, and shed light on it for us. So, Kat, if you could please come here.
Thank you.
Stephanie. I shared that with you. Thank you, Madam Mayor, Council. Thank you. I want to share that video because that is basically my story. It changes in a moment. I was a distance runner. I was at the peak of fitness. I just got elected to a dream job. I'm retired military, so 20 years ago I retired from the military. Don't do the math. I'll be 60 in a week. And my husband is back here, Ken. We're both retired military. I come from a family of service, all military, and I was missing it. So when Chase vacated his seat and he called and said, I think you're right for this job, it was an honor to run, and then to run unopposed was humbling. I like that song, that video shows I haven't driven a car since September of 22 because of my disease. It is Florida law, but it's also something I wouldn't want to do. I could not imagine living with the fact that I had a seizure while driving and hurt or killed somebody. So what I've come to council for is I'll tell a joke because this always gets me started. I've always said I was one in a million. This disease in the United States affects less than one person in a million. I got it. So what it is, it's a swelling. In my case, it's not viral. The first thing people think about is a mosquito bite or tick bite, but there's a second one called autoimmune. Sorry, my memory is terrible, babe. Autoimmune encephalitis. I'm sorry, I have very little memory anymore. And what that means in my body is that my immune system is attacking my own brain, and which is what it caused me to step down. If I couldn't serve the people of Port Orange at 100%, I couldn't serve them at all. They needed somebody who could take that seat. So in order to help raise awareness, because when I started telling people what I had, the general consensus was, I never heard of that, where your body attacks itself. And so Ken and I went on a mission to try to educate and inform people about it. And it's kind of just snowballed in a good way. So I wrote every mayor in every county. Your mayor was the very first one to get back to me, thank you very much, and said, we're in. What I wanted to do is ask each mayor to proclaim February 22nd as Encephalitis Awareness Day. Worldwide, that day is acknowledged. There is a World Encephalitis International Society that is 40 years old. Has anybody ever heard of it? Me either, till this. And from that 40-year-old society, this is the 40th anniversary, in 2014, they started the World Encephalitis Awareness Day. I never heard of that before either. It's not acknowledged in the United States except in two places. The Niagara Falls site in Canada, actually, so we'll claim it because it's Niagara Falls. And I was mistakenly told the CNN Tower. It's actually not. It's the Canadian CN Tower. But the city of Dallas just got on board. So I thought, here's a perfect opportunity, because my community, and by my community, I say Volusia County, has been so strong standing behind us and so supportive. There are days I can't get out of bed. People bring and drop food off to my husband because he has to take everything under his power in our house to make sure that I'm safe. And so I thought, why not put Volusia County on the map? Why not ask every mayor to declare that day? And on Encephalitis Awareness Day, which is February 22nd every year, the society asks major landmarks, worldwide landmarks, to light up in red for just that day. And they are an impressive list of landmarks, the Eiffel Tower, the London Bridge, but nothing in the United States. I want to change that, and I want Volusia County to be the first county that maybe it'll challenge some other counties to do it. And then Representative Tremont, Representative Barnaby, I've written all the state representatives from our area too, are trying to figure out a way that they can present it to the state. So why can't Florida be the first state in the United States to proclaim it and acknowledge it? So that was actually my reason for asking to be here and speak to the council today. If you're not aware of encephalitis, the autoimmune type, it does attack your brain. The left, differently on every person. In my case, the left front portal is where all my memories are stored. Imagine going through life with no memories. When I may not remember tomorrow I was here today. I might, but there are often times we get in the car in the afternoon. I'll look down and say, it's 3 o'clock. What have we done today? I have no idea. We've already been out of the house that day. So praise God, a couple things. I'm strong in faith. Ken and I are strong in faith, and we try to look for the silver linings. But when I had that first seizure and several since, I went out to Mayo for 2 weeks. They kept me for 4. That was before we had the diagnosis. Everybody knew. We went to Phoenix, Mayo. That was the silver lining. Jack's Mayo turned us down because they were full. Said, go to Phoenix. Phoenix ended up having the best neurological team. So it was a blessing in disguise. When I had my first seizure, I was on council. I'd come from a meeting. Ken had been up visiting our children. And I had been home about an hour. I had been home working that day. Ken had just got back. He'd been home for about an hour from visiting our kids in Virginia. And I had that seizure. So the doctors have said, had he not been home, it would be completely different if I was here at all.
Kat, it's fine. It's fine. I know
you.
I don't want you to struggle. I want you to know that you know how supportive I had you on our mayor's call. I would like the consensus of the council. I would like to have that proclamation created. Is that acceptable to everybody?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. And there was one other request, and that for lighting up something in our town.
Yes, ma'am.
In red, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And my understanding is, Mike, can I ask you to weigh in on this? Because we did talk about
it. Oh, sure. Yeah. We looked at possibly lighting up some of the public buildings we have, like Town Hall, for example, and then the fire station and the police station.
So we
that would be amazing. I have a firefighter, retired firefighter in my family. That would be amazing. And if you can let me know which one, Ken and I are going to try to make the rounds that day in Volusia County and take pictures. We're proudly going to send them to the World Encephalitis Society and say, look at Volusia County.
Well, and we will do that. We'll have the proclamation, of course, for the February 22nd. But when the lights are up and you want to come, we will make sure that happens. So
Kat,
is there anything else you'd like to share with us? Because I think that you could feel the support not only of the council, but those in the room as well. And I'm glad that everybody had the opportunity to hear from you and you to shine a light on something that I doubt we were aware. So
I appreciate you very much, Madam Mayor, and the whole council, all of you who sat here and listened to me. But it's the outpouring of community support has been unwavering. It's 18 months now, and it's just incredible. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Kat. And Ken, thank you for coming. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take care of things. Thank you. We're all very appreciative of you sharing the story, Kat. Thank you. Okay, so now we're on to our recognition of Kim Bressett for being selected as Ponce Inlet Employee of the Year. Kim or Mike?
Yeah, Kim's going to give an overview of the process. This is the time of the year when we normally introduce the person, the Employee of the Year. She's going to explain the process, and I'll tell everyone a little bit about Kim.
Good evening. The primary purpose of the Employee of the Year program is to distinguish outstanding town employees. The program is intended to encourage those employees that strive to go above and beyond the normal duties, and to recognize those who might have made significant efforts and contributions to the mission of the town. To be eligible for this award, an employee must not be in a department head position. You must have been employed with the town from October 1st through September 30th of the following year. Employees can be nominated by any of the following: their peers, their supervisors, their department heads. The Employee of the Year is selected from Employee of the Year Committee is selected from their peers, which consist of 5 members, one from each department. We receive one from fire, one from police, one from public works, one from administration, and one from the building department. There are 4 criteria that the committee reviews for each one of these nominees. They show excellence in performance of their duties, they're dedicated to their job, that committed to the goals of the town and has a spirit of cooperation with their co-workers. This year, Kim Blissette has been selected by her peers.
Thank you, Kim. Mike?
All right. You have in your packet a memo. I'll go ahead and just read that for the benefit of the audience. Many of you probably never met Kim. She's one of the invaluable behind-the-scenes players and employees in our town that makes the finance department work. And we're very proud to give this to her tonight, but I'll go ahead and read this. So Kim was nominated and selected by her peers. Of course, Kim Bressett, or Kim B, as her peers call her, started working for the town as payroll specialist / utility billing assistant in February of 2021. Before that, she worked many years as an accountant in New Smyrna Beach and brought all of that talent and experience with her. She soon took on extra responsibility of overseeing the town's utility billing system and the training of new utility billing employees that had no prior experience. She stepped up to the plate and embraced the challenge quickly, learned system operations, and handled all issues in a professional and courteous manner. Her attention to detail and degree of accuracy were the driving force in her being able to assess and assist with other complex tasks. Kim is always seeking more responsibility and is constantly finding ways to improve not only herself, but the entire department. Her commitment and determination to assist our department has helped tremendously in accomplishing one of our council goals to meet and exceed audit reporting requirements. She reviewed numerous audit schedules from the prior year and reconciled many of the most complicated ones. Kim performed them accurately and without instruction. Kim's initiative to assist the department with audit tasks resulted in another comment-free perfect audit this year, which may not have occurred without her assistance. Kim worked many additional hours to get this job done accurately. In addition to Kim's regular duties, she assisted with a FEMA reimbursement grant work from Hurricanes Ian and Nicole, as well as other FEMA-related reconciliations and schedules. She further assisted the Planning and Development Department with the InterGov upgrade implementation through testing and reconciliation of the software system. This is our permitting software system, and it connects with the finance system, and if those two don't work, then the whole thing doesn't work. She performs account reconciliations daily and works extensively to resolve any issues that may arise. Kim is patient with everyone, has a strong work ethic, and is a tremendous asset to the town. So please join me in congratulating Kim B. as our new Employee of the Year.
Kim, I have the honor of presenting this to you. I'd like to read for everybody what is on here, this beautiful, beautiful vase. In grateful recognition to the 2024 Employee of the Year, Kim Bressett, Accountant, Finance Department, for unyielding commitment and dedicated service to the town of Ponce Inlet, presented this 18th day of January, 2024. Congratulations, Kim. Congratulations, Kim. Item 6, our consent agenda. There is one item on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull this item? Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Item 7. 7A is the appointments to the Code Enforcement Board. Mike or Kim?
Yeah, Kim Shibano will handle this one.
Karen Karen Reed has applied for appointment to the vacant alternate seat number 2 for the Code Enforcement Board. She has received the board members' training materials and has attended the last 2 Code Enforcement Board meetings. She has met all council's requirement for the eligibility of the board. She is here tonight.
Yes, she's here tonight. Thank you. Okay, Karen, Ms. Raj, please, we're most appreciative of your willingness to work. Would you just come up here for a moment? We're very happy to have you serve. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about yourself? Your application was wonderful. Yes, you do.
Let's see. My name is Karen. I'm from New Jersey, and I'm 100% Ukrainian. That's a mix. I purchased my home in Ponce Inlet in 2004, but I wasn't eligible to retire until 2014, and then I moved here full-time in 2015. I spent 30 years of my life as a DEA agent. My first 4 years were in New York City, and the next 26 were spent in Newark, New Jersey.
Well, that sounds like wonderful qualifications for the Code Enforcement Board. So,
I was born in Newark, New Jersey. I know what it's like.
So we're very appreciative. Does anyone have any questions of Karen? Right. Anyone in the audience? Well, I do want to thank you. I think that it's a wonderful fit, and I wish you the best of luck on that, and I know that it'll serve our residents well, so I thank you. So I'll move to appoint Karen Raj to alternate seat number 2 for the Code Enforcement Board with a term expiration of December 31st, 2024.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion unanimously passes for placing you on the Code Enforcement Board. So we thank you.
Thank you very much. See you Monday morning.
Yep. And now we have 2 positions available, 7B for the appointments to the Planning Board. Kim?
Yes, Mr. Reback and Mr. Young have applied for appointment to the vacant alternate seats 1 and 2 for the Planning Board. They have received the board member training material and have attended a previous Planning Board meeting. They have met the requirements to be eligible for the board.
Thank you, Kim. I know that Michael Reback is here. Is Joe Young here? Oh, sorry, Joe. There you are. You know, if you don't mind, would both of you come up here? Because I know both of you have served on boards. Joe, you've served on board. And we have 2 alternate seats. Mike, you submitted your application first on December 19th. Joe, you did on the 28th. And what I would suggest is that, Mike, you would be seat 1 alternate, Joe seat 2. Is that acceptable to both of you as well?
Yes.
Do either one of you wish to say anything? We've met both of you along the way. Is there anything you'd like to say and share?
I'm Mike Reback. I've been a resident with my wife, Terry, Ponce Inlet for 31 years, since 1992, permanently since 2017. We love the town. We've been part of it. We do volunteer work with the Lighthouse and Habitat for Humanities. We also, part of my career, I worked for Westinghouse and Siemens, 37 years. My last position was running the projects department. We're responsible for building wind turbine farms in North and South America. So very familiar kind of with planning and the process. And that would be it.
Well, Mike, I thank you so much. We're very pleased when we have such solid candidates for alternate positions because invariably the seats will have to be filled. Look at what happened with Skip. Joe, do you want to say anything, a few words? Because you had been an alternate on another board, right?
Yes, the Code Enforcement Board, actually. So I appreciate seeing that appointment this evening. No, Joseph Young is my name. We have not lived here 30 years. We plan to live here for 30 years, so we do care deeply. We moved here in June of 2022, but we've been coming here, of course, for 10 or 12 years prior to that. So we do love Ponce Inlet, and most of my career has been in the public policy realm of development and growth policy. So I think this is a little better fit for me for an appointment rather than the Code Enforcement Board. But I enjoyed that time there, and I learned a lot.
Well, I thank you so much. Are there any questions of either of our applicants? Anyone in the audience? Okay, well then, seeing none, I move to appoint Michael Rivak to alternate seat 1 and Scott Joseph Young to alternate seat 2 of the Planning Board with a term expiration date of December 31, 2024.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We're very appreciative.
And welcome aboard.
Yes. Thank you. And thank you, Karen. We are at item 8, which is our public hearing, our quasi-judicial matter. So we have, Mike, I'm going to, I guess, ask you to introduce, to bring
sure.
up the people, and then I will be looking to our attorney to perhaps give us a refresher on a quasi-judicial for the sake of everyone.
All right.
Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, our principal planner, Patty Rippey, is going to present this item. I understand Vice Mayor Smith also has some information he would like to discuss related to the status of South Atlantic Avenue. And then also the applicants are here from Volusia County.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much. And Cliff, would you just spend a few moments and provide us with your insight into a quasi-judicial matter for us, our
yes,
role?
Yes, I will. And I'll try to keep it at under the hour that it typically takes to do the training. Quasi-judicial means simply that you are acting as judges. You come in with no preconceived notions. And if the applicant can prove by competent substantial evidence that it meets the requirements of the code, you should grant it unless there is contrary competent substantial evidence from somewhere in the record that will be presented to you to find a different way. A good example is if this were a case involving whether someone ran a red light. If all 10 people who testified said, yes, that happened, you would be faced with no competent substantial evidence to the contrary. But even if one said, no, they didn't run the red light, you could choose to believe the one and ignore the other 9. That's the way competent standard. It's not how much, it's whether there is evidence on both sides of the question. Secondarily, it is limited to the issues that are relevant to approve or disapprove whatever the application in here, and that's determined by code. That's why the term quasi-judicial comes in. You're acting as judges. You're going to listen to the evidence presented through the staff report, through the applicant, and ask questions of whomever, and then ultimately, essentially, deliberate like a jury, only your elected officials, and determine whether or not you heard sufficient evidence, competent and substantial evidence, that they met the application. And the other requirement that you understand is because it is a hearing of a quasi-judicial nature, if you had any ex-party communications, which means communications outside of this proceeding with the applicant, with citizens, whether it's in written form or verbally or you went to presentations or whatever regarding it, then you need to disclose those and give enough information about what it is you learned in those proceedings so that the applicant or anyone who's opposed to the project could come and ask you further questions to make sure that you aren't under some preconceived notion and they haven't had a chance to test your knowledge of that area so they can provide contrary information that you may not have heard. So those are the requirements. It would be a good idea to do the disclosure now so it's out of the way and everybody knows up front who's talked to whom or received what from whom, and then we can get into the presentations.
Does anyone have any ex parte conversations that they wish to disclose?
Yes, ma'am. Mayor, I do.
Okay.
Actually, again, coming off the planning board, I was prepared for this. So I did attend the planning board meeting on 12/19. Which this presentation was presented before the planning board. I did get up during citizen participation and ask about the LOD. And also, I did receive an email from Chad McVee. It was not concerning the development of the Marine Science Center, but it was concerning the false rosemary plants that we're looking at to transplant over after the dune restoration is complete. So I did receive an email from that, but it had nothing to do with Marine Science Center or the LOD. So in the LOD is a Lighthouse Overlay District. As far as the Lighthouse Overlay District, the questions I did ask are, they are in the packet that we did receive. And again, it was something that, in my opinion, was not addressed as much as it should have been at the planning board meeting, so I do have some further questions on that.
Okay. Do we have any other disclosures here?
Yes.
Yes.
Speaking now that I've found out that I'm a judge this evening, and my comments that I want to say is an issue that I have with the area around there, which I have informed the Marine Science Center people, but I'm not sure that the judges like to bring up an issue.
You can ask questions relevant to the evidence that's presented and whether it meets the standard that the code requires, but generally speaking, you cannot condition approval on something that's outside of what the code says you have to have. But you can certainly question, for example, if there's a portion of the code involving this thing about impacts and how it impacts. Again, I don't even know what's relevant to this thing. That's what your staff is going to tell you from the report. But if there was, for example, something that said traffic was an issue that needed to be considered, and staff's opinion was that it was properly addressed by the applicant, and therefore the evidence, quote, supports it, you can question that evidence by saying, well, what about this? Here's a study that was presented by someone in the from the audience, or something that was provided to you prior that was an ex-party communication. How do you answer that? And then you can, on that basis, if that's what happened, you could say, well, then I don't know that the evidence that I've heard is substantial enough to meet it. But you can't do that unless you disclose so that the other party has an opportunity to try to challenge what it is you're assuming based on what is the evidence you're basing that on. At the end of the day, that's how that works. But you can't typically in quasi-judicial bring in issues that are outside the scope of what is the code requirements. This often gets confused, and it comes under the realm of what is competent substantial evidence. I don't generally spend time on that in a quick refresher like this, but for the moment I will. Many times in controversial projects, I don't know that this qualifies, but you'll have citizens who are concerned about a lot of things, none of which are in the code. And you have to listen to them, but you absolutely do not have to consider them. You're not supposed to if they're not part of the requirements. And so that's kind of the way that works.
Well, then I would ask you, if I get off making a wrong turn, say something.
Traffic cop is my job.
Anyone else? No, we're good. If that's the case, then I would ask that Patty Rippey, if you would please come up here for the presentation.
Good evening, Mayor, Vice Mayor, and Council members. Let's see. All right. The applicant representing Volusia County is requesting approval of the final development plan for the proposed expansion of the Learning Center at the Marine Science Center. The project includes the addition of 2,722 square feet of new building space for a new classroom and turtle quarantine deck. The plan includes expanding the internal parking lot to add 22 parking spaces, sidewalks, decks, a shell walkway, small shell lot, and renovation of internal spaces. The justification statement provided by Chad McPhee, director at the Marine Science Center, is the project will create a dividable classroom that right-sizes our opportunities to provide live animal presentations and learning opportunities on one side and visiting student programs on the other. The project will also renovate interior portions of the center to improve visitor flow, staff, and volunteer spaces. The project will allow visitors to enjoy and learn without an important part of our educational program being closed during visiting school group field trips. The applicant's representative, John Dillard, as well as county staff members, are present tonight to answer questions. Authority and process. The application was submitted on May 23rd of 2023 and was reviewed by the town's development review team. After a series of comments and responses, a final revised plan was submitted on October 6th, 2023. Pursuant to LUDC Section 4.10.5, the landscape plan was reviewed and recommended for approval by the Cultural Services Board on December 4th. In accordance with LUDC Section 6.6, the final development plan was reviewed and recommended for approval by the Planning Board on December 19th. Pursuant to the same code section, the Town Council shall consider the final development plan for approval this evening. For a property overview, the subject property is west of South Atlantic Avenue at 100 Lighthouse Drive. The property is zoned public institutional with the same future land use designation. The site is currently developed with an existing learning center, turtle rehabilitation sanctuary, turtle commissary, bird rehabilitation sanctuary, raptor exhibit, museum, gift shop, sidewalks, decks, and natural vegetation. There is extensive tree canopy surrounding the structures, and a limited area of less than half an acre shall be cleared to accommodate the expansion. The 5.93 acres Marine Science Center boundary is managed by Volusia County's Environmental Management Division, while the 51 acres of the Lighthouse Point Park is managed by Volusia County's Coastal Division. Okay, expansion details. I don't know if you can see this very well, but it was included in your packet as well. There will be a new 1,658 square foot dedicated education room to replace a 550 square foot classroom now serving multiple purposes. Internal renovations for staff office space, storage, and separation of uses. A new 1,064 square foot turtle quarantine deck. A new meandering sidewalk from the parking lot to be used for connection to existing sidewalk and for education of native habitat. A parking lot expansion adding 22 parking spaces and sidewalk extension to Lighthouse Drive for improved flow of foot traffic and for pedestrian safety. A shell parking area for employees and an additional area for students, and new decks around the expanded and new structures linking to existing structures. And here's the site layout on this slide. The red ink denotes the new structures, and the blue are the existing structures. All of the new structures and elements are internal to the site and are not visible from the street. So here's the architectural elevations. Those were not in the PowerPoint last time. They were in the report. But the new structures and decks connecting to existing structures are planned to be compatible with the other buildings at the complex. The buildings use a variety of materials, styles, and colors to blend into the heavily wooded setting of the property. As this parcel is located within the 750-foot radius of the lighthouse in the Lighthouse Overlay District, staff reviewed and found the final development plan in compliance with specific criteria set forth in LUDC Section 2.16.E.1. Those five criteria, number one, the plan is consistent with the purpose and intent of the LOD, which is to protect significant vistas that include the lighthouse or surrounding historic grounds. It is consistent with the comprehensive plan. The site is physically suitable for the project design and its construction phase. The development minimizes and reduces visual impacts and obstructions from the lighthouse, and the architectural style and building scale reflect the historic setting and unique character of this geographic area. Parking, traffic, and educational programming. A total of 28 parking spaces and 2 handicap parking spaces are required based upon the uses of assembly, exhibit, and office space. There are currently 17 spaces in the existing paved parking lot and 21 spaces on the south side of Lighthouse Drive reserved for the Marine Science Center parking during facility operating hours. The parking lot expansion will add 22 new parking spaces. The daily traffic count is calculated on square footage of office, museum, and exhibit spaces. The applicant indicated that there will be no expansion of programming or operating hours, and that the limited hours and days of operation that are 10 to 4 p.m. Tuesday to Sunday and closed Monday do not allow them to do so. Okay, and then for tree removal. They are proposing 19 trees to be removed from the building and parking lot footprint. 4 trees will need to be removed from the stormwater area. The site is heavily wooded, therefore mitigation is not required for trees removed from the building footprint or driveway. Mitigation is required for 4 trees removed from the stormwater area, and a total of 56 shade trees will be planted along with shrubs, ground cover, and sod. That's part of the landscape plan, and that plan meets and exceeds the requirements for mitigation and minimum landscaping pursuant to LUDC Section 4.10. Landscaping will include native species such as live oak, yaupon holly, wax myrtle, southern magnolia, sable palm, American beautyberry, Simpson stopper, wild coffee, saw palmetto, and kunti. Plantings will be located around the perimeter of the parking lot, the new structures, and along the northwest portion of the property, buffering the stormwater retention area and the boat trailer parking lot on South Peninsula Drive. And those areas are highlighted in green on that slide. And those are pictures of the type of native plants that they will be putting in. And then the final development plan review criteria from the LUDC was reviewed by staff. The proposed expansion will not impact the characteristic of the site and surrounding areas. The proposed buildings will be consistent with the existing structures, while the existing vegetation screens the project area from adjacent properties and land uses. The proposed expansion will not create additional traffic or utility concurrency impacts. There is a planned utility line improvement project to address water pressure and an aging pump station that is scheduled in 2024. However, that project would be necessary without the proposed improvements. The nature of the proposed development complies with all requirements for the improvements, including allowable uses, density, location, parking, and circulation, and preservation of natural features and open spaces. The proposed development is consistent with the comprehensive plan, the land use code, and other regulations. Concerns of surrounding landowners and other affected persons have been noted in the attachment from the planning board member Michael Kazuba. In addition, resident Peter Haley of 4993 South Peninsula Drive visited Town Hall on January 10th, and I spoke to him. He was inquiring to make sure that improvements would not be located on the south side of Lighthouse Drive. Based on the findings in this report, staff recommends that the Town Council approve the Marine Science Center Learning Center expansion project, and I'm happy to answer any questions, and those that I can't answer, the representatives are here from the county, as well as the applicant's representative.
Patty, thank you so much. And I want to express my appreciation for how thorough your report was. Are there any questions here? Skip?
I'll go first. Sure.
Okay.
Mine are pretty simple. The first question I have, and it might be you can answer it or Chad, where they're looking at replacing the sewer lines and the aging pump station, and it says replaced in 2024. Is there any way that can be included in this development where, I'll say, the disruption is once and not a couple times this coming year? Is that possible? They're shaking their head back there. So can we have them address that, please?
Good evening. I'm Clay Irvin. I'm the Director of Growth and Resource Management. The people with the actual answers are Chad McPhee, who you all know. He is there, at Laura Laser, and John Dillard. That is a separate project that's already been initiated, so we are making sure that we will minimize disturbing the area, and we'll basically have the contractors out there working concurrently.
Okay. That answers. Okay. If you read it, to me, it seemed like it was a separate type project. So even though it's separate, it's the timing's going to be the same, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That was the whole goal.
Okay. The other couple questions I have, and again, on the LOD, on line 137, which is under our memorandum, it states in there that the Learning Center expansion, turtle quarantine deck addition, have been designed to comply with the town's architectural requirements, which I understand that. The total height, I get that, 27 feet, 35 feet is the current facility that's there. It did not address, and I tried to look and do my homework, but if you look at the scale on the building and the build out, I could not distinguish what the width is of the building once complete. And based on our LOD, the maximum is 55 feet. And then it's 20 feet from wall to wall. So where the Raptor Center has been opened, is there, and I tried to look on the pretty pictures and I couldn't make that out, is there 20 feet between the Raptor building and the new expansion? Two questions. And the second question is, does this fit within the 55 feet maximum? And is that 55 feet including the back decks, because the back decks are elevated?
Those are all good questions. I looked at the width of the expanded buildings. I didn't look at the overall width of the existing building. I can't tell you 100% sure that there's 20 feet between them, but I believe there is.
Okay. Well, and again, that draws my question. So is there anyone here that can answer that question?
So what our main concern is the newly installed Raptor building and making sure we have the 20-foot separation as required by the LOD.
It's actually two questions. The
right.
Overall the width of the building, 55 feet, and then once that's complete, the Raptor building is currently completed. Is there going to be 20 feet between the two buildings based on our LOD?
I will have to defer to your staff in regards to how you approach sidewalks and decks that lead up to it. If you're just talking about the vertical walls, I believe we'll have the 20 feet. Where I'm concerned about is, because if you look at the, presentation?
Absolutely. Go back to the overhead. If it's a scale, it is.
You can't see the scale. Yeah.
No.
And so I'm hoping this is what I did. Well. Did I turn the things off?
Yeah.
There we go.
I got this cute little.
That would have been interesting. Is there a pointer on this? Ben, look at. Well, if we can look at the picture here, as you can see, the new gravel walkway we have. There's the Raptor exhibit immediately adjacent. Then the separation to the building itself will meet the 20 feet. I just want to point out that there is a deck walkway leading up there, so there would be stairwells, but that would not necessarily constitute an enclosed building. And I don't mean to hem and haw. I just want to make sure that
right.
I say here it's separation between buildings will be okay.
Right.
In regards to the overall width, I have to be honest with you. I don't know what the overall width of the existing structure is and how this addition is. Is it being treated as along the same face because there is a change in the movement of the building? And also we have out in front there, as you're aware, that's where many of the tanks are for where we're treating the turtles themselves. So, again, I would defer on how your staff wants to treat those structures, and we can talk through those.
Yeah, I can address those, sure. Yeah, the width requirement, that applies to buildings located between any street and the Halifax River. So the intent there is if you're on the river, that you can still see the lighthouse. You know, that there's nothing blocking that. And that does not apply to this situation.
Yeah, it's not in the way.
The other thing is about the separation. We're treating this as one building. It's not multiple buildings, you know, in a row lined up together. This is part of the same structure. So that's how we looked at it.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay. I got my thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're done, Skip? Mm-hmm. Joe?
No question.
Nothing. Bill? Gary? Yeah.
Question. Usually an increase in facilities and an increase in parking goes along with an increase in traffic. Have they analyzed the traffic increases, and what are they?
They have, and to preface that, though, as far as they are not increasing programs, they're not increasing employees. Right now they have a issue where they're working on top of one another, so moving the classroom into a different structure allows them to have more office space. But the traffic memo that we received in the packet, it noted that the new development would provide or would create 9.37 additional annual daily traffic movements. So it's, taken into account, it takes into account the use and the square footage, and that's just a small part of the entire facility, but even the movements for the entire facility are not enough to affect our road classification, and it's not enough to trigger any kind of traffic study. Okay. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, the applicant can address that as well.
Thank you. And that's, I understand the questions you're coming from. You're hearing a 2,000 square foot expansion. Obviously, is that going to increase our overall operations? We can control operations, physical space, and operationally. First of all, half of that is going to be utilized for a quarantine area for sea life. That's where we're going to, when we get new turtles in, and actually if we get other sea life that need attending to, this is the area that we can keep them from the general population, prevent further disease spreading around and perhaps injuring those. So that's not going to be open to the public. That's just only for current employees that we have housed at the Marine Science Center. The expansion that includes the education facilities, if you look at the overall footprint of what we're doing here, we're taking our existing classroom and making it closets and offices, because right now, if you've gone to Shell Webster's office, you'll see that it's shared with another employee, and that's also a closet. So what we're doing is, as you heard in Chad's write-up and summary of why we're seeking this, we're right-sizing it. So we're not going to be increasing the hours of operation. I know that we run a summer camp there. We're not going to be increasing the number of participants. We're not going to be increasing the number of classrooms or anything else available for it. What we're doing is making sure that the space that's available is usable. Also, right now in our gallery, we recently removed a fish tank that was in there that was one of the original exhibits and was pretty old. And so we're going to be replacing it with a larger one that's going to be actually a replica of the Philomena that we sunk out here, and it's going to be a much more interactive exhibit. That's going to take up space. So therefore, that's why we have to move and relocate our gift shop. We're not expanding the size of the gift shop. We're just moving it away so that we can have some safety in regards to people moving in and out. COVID taught us all some valuable lessons. And when you have closed, confined space and you start realizing you have to have 6 foot of separation, you start realizing that you need to have greater ability to walk. Anyone who's been in our existing facility knows that we do have pinch points, which creates problems for our public. Our goal is not to increase the number of public, but just making sure that when they are here, they can freely move around. So that's why we're saying is that we're trying to right-size this operation. We did look at the fact that you are adding additional area. The memo that was provided is utilizing trip generation concepts that are adopted by your TPO in regards to it uses the Institute of Traffic Engineers trip generation rates based on the size of the expansion to come up with your daily trip ratio. So basically what we're saying is that it's realistic to expect an additional 10 trips. So therefore, we're trying to make accommodations with it also as far as our parking and expanding some of those facilities as well.
Clay, thank you. Does anyone have any other questions either for our staff members or for anyone here from the county?
Yeah, I have one more.
Okay.
And again, it's pertaining to the stormwater drains and runoff. One thing that Ponce Inlet has continued to struggle with is our retention area. And again, I don't know if it's possible, but this is a prime place for us to have some stormwater runoff in certain areas. I know at the last time I was on the planning board and the one of the expansions was coming up, we had discussion about stormwater drains, and you guys were utilizing, I say you guys, the Marine Science Center was utilizing their current stormwater runoff. Is there any change to that? Is there any new stormwater retention areas being developed? If so, can you share that with us?
If you look on the screen, on the top of the screen, the larger green area, the block, that is a stormwater retention area that's required for this project.
So that's
project.
New.
That is new, yes,
okay,
sir.
Okay, good. That answered my question. Yep. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Do you have anything you wish to add? Is anything that the county wishes to provide, any additional information, closing comments, anything?
Again, we want to thank you all for your cooperation. Your staff has been fantastic working with us. We find the town of Ponce Inlet to be our home, and as such, we want to respect it, and that's why we know that one of the concerns that we've heard through over the last 3 years as we've gone through some improvements and upgrades to there is the concern of taking away the character that is Ponce Inlet. And you have the commitment from Volusia County and its staff with the operation there to ensure and protect that. You know, we all go through growing pains, and we are trying to address some of the bare mean needs that we have out there. So we're doing it as minimally as possible. We're trying to utilize as much as we can. It's part of the natural environment. We as a county are proponents of use of natural resources as such that all the landscaping out there is going to be natural or Florida friendly. So we're again thankful that y'all are working with us. We are able to continue on the mission that was identified for the Marine Science Center, and we look forward to working with you throughout the completion of this project.
Thank you very much, Clay. Okay. I am able to make the motion unless someone else would like to.
Yeah. Do we need to hear from the public?
Yeah, public. I'm so sorry, public. I apologize. Robert, please come up here.
Robert Bullard, 4802 South Peninsula Drive, Ponce Inlet. The Marine Science Center is an icon, and it's really amazing. But I have three questions I'd like to ask, generally related to this, and I hope it's consistent with the extent of the consideration for the Marine Science Center's request. First is, who is the underlying owner of the land upon which the Marine Science Center is located?
The state of Florida.
Has the state of Florida been informed of this new development at the Marine Science Center?
Yeah, that's part of the public notification as the owner.
Okay. The second question is, the Marine Science Center was built originally as a condition of the limited take permit with the Federal Department of Interior. Has the Federal Department of Interior been informed about this to be sure it's consistent with their understanding of the limited take permit?
That'd be a question for the county staff.
Again, what we have is that the Marine Science Center was identified as part of the incidental take period as part of our voluntary mitigation. It's to provide for rehabilitation and education. It's part of our annual report. We update the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as part of our annual report to them of potential changes and all that. It's all wrapped up into part of our annual report to them.
Okay. Thank you, Clay. Good. Okay.
Number three is... With respect to the visitations that take place, is there going to be